Thank you, Lori. Good morning. This chart shows the estimated number of deaths from cancers attributable to HPV 16 and 18 in the U.S. This chart shows the estimated number of deaths from cancers attributable to HPV 16 and 18 in the U.S. for females in red and males in blue. So the burden of HPV is greater for females than males, but there still is potential for males to benefit from vaccination. And further, the vaccination of males could help to reduce the burden of HPV in females. So what I will do today is talk about the potential impact of male HPV vaccination, and then I'll move on to cost effectiveness issues, including a summary of published estimates, as well as a brief description of our model, assumptions, and results. So I'll start with a brief illustration of the potential impact of male vaccination, and particularly the importance of vaccine coverage of females. So imagine that the health burden of HPV could be represented by these yellow bars. As discussed earlier, the burden of HPV is greater in females than males. Now, if we vaccinated females only and could achieve high coverage, we could have a big direct impact on the burden of disease in females, as shown here by the red. And further, by vaccinating females, we can have an effect on HPV in males, which would in turn affect females, and so on and so on. And those indirect effects, or herd immunity, could have another effect on the burden of HPV disease, both in females and males. So with high coverage, we can have high coverage of females only, we could have a big impact on HPV. And that leaves very little room for male vaccination to have an additional benefit. So with high vaccine coverage of females, male vaccination might not be as cost effective. Now with low coverage of females, we might have a completely different scenario. The direct benefits would be much less than before, and similarly the indirect effects would be less, and this would leave a lot more room for the potential benefits of male vaccination. So the coverage of females is going to be one of the biggest factors in determining the cost effectiveness of male vaccination. So now I'll move on to cost effectiveness now. I want to give a brief description of quality adjusted life years. Vaccination cost effectiveness is often expressed in terms of the cost per quality gained. And qualities are a measure of the number and quality of life years gained by an intervention such as vaccination. 1 year of life in perfect health is given a value of 1 quality, death 0 qualities, and 1 year of life in less than perfect health is given a value between 0 and 1 qualities, depending on the severity of the health issue. For example, 1 year of life with genital warts might be given a value of 0.94 qualities. 1 year of life with invasive cervical cancer might be given a value of 0.55 qualities. I'm sorry. Okay, is this better? Okay, I'm sorry. So now we'll move on to a summary of the published estimates of the cost effectiveness. The first study was by Terra and colleagues, and they included cervical outcomes only in their analysis. And they found, as suggested by the previous illustration, that female coverage has a big impact on cost effectiveness. The cost per quality estimates increased roughly tenfold when moving from the low female coverage scenario to the high female coverage scenario. The next generation of studies included not only cervical outcomes, but also genital warts. And in the study by El-Bashir and colleagues from Merck, the cost per quality was about $24,000 when female coverage was 50% and increased to $42,000 to $128,000 when female coverage was 70% and 90% respectively. The study by Jid and colleagues in the UK did not look at a range of coverage for females, but found that with high coverage of females, the cost per quality of male vaccination could be as high as $1 million or more. And the most recent published study by Kim and Goldie included cervical outcomes, genital warts, other HPV-associated cancers, and RRP. And they found in their moderate efficacy scenario that with female coverage of 50%, the cost per quality of male vaccination was about $90,000, and with higher female coverage, it increased to $124,000. So now I'll move on to a description of our model. This shows a simple illustration of our model for HPV type 16. For the other types, we used a similar approach. The population is divided into two groups based on whether or not they've ever been infected with HPV 16 and whether or not they've ever been vaccinated. And we did calculations each year. And each year, a cohort of 8-year-olds would enter the model and a cohort of 99-year-olds would exit the model. Each year, there is a chance of being vaccinated, at least for those age groups subject to vaccination. And each year there is a chance of acquiring HPV 16, even for those vaccinated in the event of vaccine failure. Some of the key assumptions we used, I'll start with coverage because this is perhaps the most important assumption. We assumed that for 12-year-olds there was a 20% chance of vaccination. And for females, we assumed that the annual probability of catch-up vaccination was 5% for ages 13 to 18 and 1% for ages 19 to 26. So that for someone from age 12 through 26, they'd have about a 50% chance of being vaccinated by age 26. We also looked at lower coverage and higher coverage scenarios in which the cumulative probability of vaccination was about 30% and 75% respectively. We assumed a $500 cost per vaccine series. This includes the cost of the vaccine, administration, and wastage. We assumed efficacy against infection would be 95% for females and 90% for males. We looked at cost and benefits over a 100-year vaccination program. And we used a limited societal perspective, meaning that we included all direct cost and benefits, regardless of who pays the cost or who receives the benefits. The health outcomes we included are listed here. We included cervical outcomes as well as other non-cervical HPV-associated cancers. And we included HPV 6/11 outcomes of genital warts and juvenile onset RRP. So now for the results. This table shows the estimated cost per quality gained by vaccination and how these estimates change depending on the HPV diseases included in the analysis. The column on the far right shows the incremental cost per quality of adding male vaccination to a female-only vaccination strategy. When including only cervical outcomes in the analysis, the cost per quality was about $82,000. As we included more and more health outcomes, the cost per quality decreased. And when including all outcomes, as shown on the bottom row, the cost per quality of male vaccination was about $37,000. This chart shows how the cost per quality of male vaccination changes under the three coverage scenarios that we used. As was found in the other models, when we increased the coverage of females, the cost per quality of male vaccination increased as well. In the high coverage scenario, the cost per quality exceeded $100,000, even when we included all health outcomes in the analysis. Now, so far we have looked at the option of adding male vaccination to female vaccination. Perhaps another option we could look at is saying, well, let's put efforts into expanding female coverage. So what we've done in this twist is to look at the strategy of expanded female vaccination and then compare male vaccination to that. So the cost per quality of female vaccination is shown by the black bars. As you can see, it's fairly low. It's less than $25,000, even when we only include cervical outcomes and genital warts. However, male vaccination compared to this strategy of expanded female vaccination is not as attractive as before, and the cost per quality is over $300,000 when including only cervical outcomes and genital warts, and over $100,000 when looking at all outcomes. Now, of course, this assumes we could expand female coverage without incurring additional outreach costs, so we want to refine this in the future to determine what exactly the trade-off would be. So there are limitations to our approach. We do use a simplified transmission model, and we had to make numerous simplifying assumptions. There's uncertainty in the parameter values that we use, for example, in the quality of life impact of HPV-associated outcomes. And in the interest of time, I did not present a full sensitivity analysis, but we will have that available in the future. And in summary, the cost effectiveness of male vaccination is subject to considerable uncertainty. There are differences in the cost per quality estimates within one model when key assumptions are changed, and across different models due to the differences in the model structures and assumptions that are used. The cost effectiveness of male vaccination depends very heavily on vaccine coverage of females, as well as the health outcomes included in the analysis. The most favorable scenarios for male vaccination are when female coverage is low and when we assume the vaccine will have a big impact on all possible HPV-associated outcomes. So to conclude, male vaccination could potentially be cost effective, particularly if coverage of females is low and if we are willing to include all of the HPV-associated outcomes in the analysis. However, improving vaccination coverage of females could be a more effective and cost-effective strategy than male vaccination. Thank you.
I can't help myself. Harold, can you share with us what percentage of females treat us as a burdensome?
I'll let maybe Lori answer the coverage questions.
Well, we presented this earlier in the conference. We know that initiation across the United States with at least one dose is about 37%. We don't have good data on how many have completed three doses because those surveys, you know, can't capture that. But it's definitely less than 20% from those surveys. But a lot of those surveys don't allow timeline to complete the three doses. But we do know that one dose is only 37%.
Right, and I'm just wondering, given those data and what you presented, Carol, are we then on that low coverage scenario?
What we did.
Just to put perspective to the presentation you just gave.
Yeah, we looked at the changes in coverage from 2007 to 2008, and our model allows for a slow buildup to reach the coverage assumptions that we use. So we thought the base case was consistent with the current coverage that we had seen, and also the lower bound might be more applicable depending on how many people actually complete the series.
Yeah, so we don't just so everybody understands where we're at and how that matches the data that you presented. And I just want to say, I introduced myself as a cancer epidemiologist. I'm a cancer prevention person. And I can tell you, we've spent a lot of money trying to reach hard-to-reach people for pap smear screening. And I just kind of want to bring some historical perspective. What does it take to get a prevention strategy that's in the cancer prevention arena out there, especially to a relatively hard to reach population of adolescents? And you know, you'd almost want to say, how much would it cost us? What kind of an effort and how much is it going to cost us to really get that female vaccination dissemination rate up there? And then consider that in our cost effectiveness model. And say, okay, then what, you know, how do we approach this so we can really get population benefit as quickly as possible in the U.S.? Things sound so nice. Yeah, we're going to just increase female coverage. There are major challenges to doing that in this country. And those challenges, by the way, are shared in other countries around the world. Unless we can do a school-based program or have school entry requirements, we are continually going to hit that barrier with upping the dissemination to females.
Do we have time for them?
I kind of want to piggyback on what Anna said. Isn't it also the case that when a vaccine like this one that's introduced in the midst of a little bit of controversy and all of that, that the early access numbers, so the 37% or whatever that we've gotten in these few years, is likely to not continue to increase at that rate because we get into the harder to reach groups, we lose the people who were excited about a vaccine and access health care quickly and easily anyway, and that there's a possibility that a different kind of an ACIP recommendation, which none of us can predict here, would result in more men being vaccinated at a more rapid rate in that same kind of early on phase. So that when we look at determining what the denominator is, what the coverage is, does that factor in a substantial probably slowing down of the number of women that are being vaccinated each year? It's probably just a poor way of restating Anna's question, but I'm not as articulate as she is. So there you go.
Okay. This has been debated, of course, how high the coverage is going to get without school immunization programs or requirements. And, you know, we don't have these mass campaigns that coverage up really high in the U.S. And a lot of people that have looked at these say coverage is going to increase. You know, people, you know, what's happened over, you know, there's a HPV vaccine, the coverage increased more than any other adolescent vaccine between 2007 and 2008. People do expect that to increase. What you're talking about is when you get to the 80% or 90%, it's hard to get that last 10% in. But people do think that this isn't coverage is going to increase, and we have to monitor it and see what happens.
I'm optimistic. I don't think it'll be easy to get to the 80%.
I don't think so either, but I'm just saying that, you know, people do feel it's going to increase, and there's an awareness of that. So, I mean, I think that it's maybe early, too early to know what's happening. You just have these two data points. And, you know, a lot of people maybe haven't been to a physician yet. I mean, you know, adolescents don't go in that often to get vaccinated. And males seek preventative services even less than females. So, I mean, so I think it's really to know, but these are all of the issues that are being taken into consideration. But I thought your question was, is male vaccination going to decrease female vaccination? Is that
no, I don't know, not at all. In fact, I was poorly stating is that because female vaccination isn't increasing at that clip, that a recommendation for vaccinating men at that age might see a bigger increase in male vaccination than we would otherwise have seen. In fact, quite the opposite has been our concern, is that not having a recommendation for boys might have a chilling effect on vaccination of girls and men.
Right, there's that. These are all the policy issues.
Yes. About the methodology, you did not appear to, in your model, consider the MSM population. So they either need to be removed from the denominator for the males so that your cost actually would then go up, or have you done a separate analysis looking at the cost effectiveness of immunizing the MSM population? Because it looked like you were expecting transmission to go from women to men and back and forth. Maybe the initial strategy should be to focus on the MSM population rather than trying to encourage parents to immunize all boys.
Yes, our model did assume just an effect of vaccination on heterosexual transmission. MSM were included, I would say, indirectly in that we used rates of cancer in males as observed nationally, so they were at least reflected in that. But we do plan to do an MSM-specific model for the impact and cost effectiveness of HPV vaccination. And we do know that other modeling groups are doing the same as well.
Model suggests that of male vaccination is more cost effective if female vaccination is low. However, in real world, if the female vaccination rate is low, how can we convince males to get a vaccination?
Well, what we're just saying is it's possible that for the few males that assume we could vaccinate the same percentage of males as females, or even half that, we're just saying that it's possible that expenditure could be worthwhile, even if it doesn't get the coverage level that we want. It would still have a health benefit that would be possibly worth the expenditure. We do hope to submit this in the near future. I will say that the coverage assumptions that we presented today are much lower than what we submitted in the abstract. So if you look at the abstract, you'll see much less favorable cost-effectiveness estimates because we were using much higher coverage rates. But we wanted to use rates that were more reflective of what's being observed today.
Just commenting on the statement about the MSM concentration. It seems an incredibly difficult strategy, especially if we're trying to ask parents to vaccinate at 11 or 12, when most teenage young adolescent males have not declared their orientation. So how does that play into it?
What we would do is actually model what is the cost, we just want to target men who are self-identified as MSM, whether it's at age 16 or 25, just look at the probability that they've already been exposed to the vaccine types and the probability that they might benefit from the vaccine in the future. So we would try to take all those factors into account.
Right, but let's go back to the policy implications of that from the provider perspective and how you would ever roll it out in, you know, where you're targeting vaccine to adolescents, primarily under age 18. Is there a practical implication of that?
Yeah. That's been discussed extensively. I think the issue of accessing MSM or targeting MSM at an age in which they would benefit, that is before they've been exposed, is very problematic. And so that has been discussed. On the other hand, we know that there is a lot of interest in the vaccine in the MSM community. So all these issues need to be taken into account. But there's no question that it's very challenging to have a targeted strategy, certainly at age 11 or 12.
If I could just say one thing, I think that now the adolescents are males and females.
same adolescent platform of vaccines that are required. So it's not like girls just getting HPV and boys, and then Tdap and MCD4. Now it's going to be all the same for boys and girls. That'll just make it a lot easier for the marketing, for pushing it, for immunization programs. So I think that's going to improve coverage for making it more standardized. This is the package for everyone instead of gender specific. Thank you, Carol. It's a very complicated topic.
Thank you.